You're listening to Rick Kleffel, the Agony Column podcast. You can find additional reviews, interviews, print interviews, and book commentary 5 days a week at trashotron.com/agony. Ian MacDonald is the author of novels that include Evolution Shore, Desolation Road, and River of Gods. His forthcoming novel from Victor Gollancz and Peer is Brazil. This interview was conducted during the 2005 Worldcon in Glasgow. Ian, tell us a little bit about your background and how it relates to your writing.
I'm a sort of mongrel of the islands, very much, in that my father was from Scotland and my mother was from Ireland, but I was born in Manchester in England, but I've lived all my life, almost all my life in Northern Ireland, so I'm a kind of miscegenation of identities from all across the British Isles. I think that kind of informs quite a lot of the way I write and the way I think about things, in that I sort of always tend to take kind of the outsider's point of view rather than the insider's point of view. You know, I always feel like I'm sort of a person on the edge of things rather than in the centre, living in a place like Northern Ireland, which is pretty much on the edge of certainly the UK, the edge of Ireland, the edge of Europe, and probably the edge of civilization as well at the moment. So I sort of feel my sort of nomad roots have pushed me in that certain writing direction. I think it's Ian Banks has a theory, which actually stands up to quite good scrutiny, that all writers have moved before the age of five. And every writer I know has, in fact, undergone some major family upheaval before they were 5 years old and sort of given up home and family and moved somewhere else. So I certainly fit into that mode.
Tell us a little bit about the international flavor of your science fiction and why you bring that to your science fiction.
I think it's pretty much because living as I do just outside Belfast, it's one of the possibly the least science fictional places on Earth. It's easy to imagine the giant UFO with the giant robot, Klaatu, the giant robot, sort of landing on the White House lawn, but it's much, much harder to imagine it landing outside City Hall, Belfast. So I find I kind of have to look outside the place where I live. It's easy for people in the United States to base stuff in the United States because, you know, it's a big country. It's kind of naturally kind of forward-looking. But for me, from a small statelet, it's much harder to do that. So I kind of find I'm sort of looking towards other countries, you know, other kind of developing nations, which I tend to feel have been kind of ignored in science fiction as well. You know, that the future isn't just coming to the first world; it's coming to all the worlds, the developing world, the third world as well, and in many cases, places like India and China and Africa as well. A lot of countries are making a jump from the Iron Age to the Information Age in one generation, and in many cases, like India, doing it extremely successfully. And certainly India looks set to become, you know, one of the major Information Age players in the 21st century. I suspect even more so than China. India has a couple of big benefits, but one of which is English speaking. They value knowledge and they value education, and also it has a democratic basis as well. It's the world's biggest democracy, and I think India will be probably in many ways a more major player than China, which I feel will remain kind of a manufacturing country rather than a knowledge based economy, which is a terrible cliche, but it seems to be the one they use these days. But in my writing, certainly I do find I'm kind of more drawn to those marginal places. I've set science fiction in Kenya, in India, and the next book I'm sort of looking for developing countries, and kind of Brazil struck my attention as this huge, very odd country that's been almost completely ignored in the West. If you go into a bookshop, you can find six times as many books about Cuba than you can about Brazil, and Cuba is, you know, a fraction of the size of Brazil, the world's fifth biggest nation. Basically, it was Charles de Gaulle once said, Brazil is not a serious country. And I think history will prove Charles de Gaulle to be totally wrong about this, that Brazil is a pretty serious country. It's got a pretty good aerospace industry, it's got its own space program. It's the big regional superpower down in South America, and it's one of what's known as the CRIB countries, China, Russia, India, and Brazil, all the sort of developing countries that will be major players in this unfolding century.
Ian, tell us why science fiction matters to the future. Tell us about the future of science fiction, and tell us why Worldcon matters to science fiction.
I think a while back there was a kind of collective stutter in science fiction whenever we hit the 21st century and found that we didn't have the giant black slab sitting outside. We weren't on our way to the moons of Jupiter, and we didn't ride around in little plastic bubbles and wearing tinfoil spacesuits and popping pills. There was a kind of sense, particularly outside the genre, that science fiction was no longer relevant because the future was already here. Thank you very much. And the future looked exactly like it did 10 years ago. The future was just like the past. But I think science fiction, it's an ever-evolving genre. In a sense, all science fiction is always about the present, and it's kind of picked itself up, sort of turned around, looked at what it's doing. And I think is kind of looking back to the future again in a different way. At the moment, space opera is the big thing, but I think that's changing as well. There's a much more kind of looking to what sort of humanity and the future of this earth and the future of humanity is about. Books like Charlie Strauss's Accelerando sequence, about evolving post-humanity. There's a lot of kind of singularity stuff as well, which isn't just the point where computers become super sentient. The singularity is much more complex than that. It's kind of the stage where humanity no longer knows what's happening to itself. In fact, I think in a way we've been through many singularities. I think there was one back in the Middle Ages. There's probably one about the Industrial Revolution as well, where we no longer knew what the shape of the future is going to be. And I think as a society, we've kind of picked ourselves up. We sort of got over the kind of post-20th century nostalgia and are now actually turning around and looking to what the 21st century actually could be like. And science fiction is there, hopefully yet again at the front, actually, trying to interpret what the next 80, 90 years and beyond will be like for us. For a Worldcon, why Worldcon matters, and particularly having a Worldcon outside the United States, is that it's a global literature with a global reach. I think it's Cory Doctorow in Eastern Standard Tribe kind of promotes this thing of kind of the new tribe, the kind of the non-geographical nation of people bonded together, through the net, into kind of interest groups and identity groups and kind of sort of basically nations onto themselves. And in a sense, that's actually science fiction has been doing that for years anyway. I mean, it's always been this kind of international entity, bringing people together who've all read the same books, who all kind of in a way know each other as well. Bring them all together once a year into one physical location to meet, greet, and drink a lot. And it's nice having a Worldcon outside America as well, because that really internationalizes the whole thing. Yeah, it's a lot of people in one place celebrating the genre.
Ian, tell us a little bit about what you think the art forms of the 21st century are, and I'd like you to talk about the relationship between written science fiction, the media science fiction, movies, televisions, video games. Science fiction has become a genre that is spread out throughout the art forms. I'd like you to talk about that kind of interaction and feedback loop.
Well, basically, I mean, I've always had a bit of a reputation for about the past 5 years of being a sampler and remixer in my science fiction. I mean, I will quite unashamedly kind of lift a sample from some classic piece of SF or whatever and kind of mix it into my old thing. And I do feel actually that the whole kind of sample and edit thing is moving outside music into people's computers, and everyone now can, everyone can take their home photographs and Photoshop them into something they really want. People can podcast, take their own music, take their own speech, edit it down on their own computers and stick it out there as well. Home video used to take a huge bank of Apple Macs to edit digitally, and you can do that on your own PC or even on your laptop now. You can do a pretty professional edit, with a complete sound dub on your own laptop. And the power of the edit is a mighty, mighty thing. I mean, I work in program development for a TV production company, and we use editing every day. The ability to pick and choose the relevant bits, the best bits, and jam them together into a narrative sequence that makes sense to you and drops the boring bits out. And I feel as this becomes more and more widespread, the edit is kind of the art of the 21st century. The ability to edit your own reality. What news is relevant to you? What gossip is relevant to you? I suspect, in about 5 or 6 years, we will have, artificial intelligence stuff on your computer that will edit the happening world down to what's entirely relevant to you and only what you want to know. In fact, it's happening already with, kind of things like Amazon. If you click on there, it's your recommendations. This little edit bot in there has gone through all its book lists, seen what you bought last time, and said, "Well, you might like that as well." It's an edited reality. To go on to media science fiction, I mean, I have actually worked in both written and media. I wrote a science fiction TV movie for UK Channel 5, went out about 5, 6 years ago. It was a development of the old 1970s Doomwatch series, which was on the BBC. I'm very proud of it, I was too. It was a complete 2-hour self-contained TV movie with a halfway decent budget. One of science fiction as a written form's challenges is to move away from in some ways, the cliches that kind of media TV has taken on. Everyone judges science fiction by what happens in Star Trek or SG-1 or even God Save Us, Andromeda, which I've never been able to get through a single episode of because I just can't follow what's happening in it. Everyone is now familiar with these mythological tropes, really, the spaceship, the crew, the dashing captain, the transporter, the holodeck. All these things have kind of entered through media science fiction, the popular imagination. It's in the back of everyone's brains. And I think for written science fiction, a lot of the challenge is to develop new myths, new tropes. The cyberpunk trope, kind of which rose in the 80s, that's one that's kind of out there and is kind of infecting society, and it's working its way into the back of people's brains the way that the old 1950s stroke Star Trek universe did. And it's up to us as fiction writers, because fiction is always a lot more cutting edge than TV. TV is in many ways an essentially conservative genre. Once you've gone through the entire sort of development, pitching, production, commissioning editor process, what comes out is usually a fairly conservative product. And I think it's our job as text writers or meta text writers, to say, well, where's the new set of mythologies coming from? Where are new gods and demons? Where are new kind of heroes and villains? And what are those ideas out there that will kind of inform the way we look at the world and become part of everyone's common everyday language.
You're listening to Rick Kleffel, the Agony Column podcast. You can find additional reviews, interviews, print interviews, and book commentary 5 days a week at trashotron.com/agony.